accidentally just a second ago, but yeah, and I'm gonna get rid of that because we don't need that. So we're gonna start in a few minutes, everyone. Just confirming that we are indeed live because we have all our speakers here. Just checking. Yep. And yep. So this is going. All right, I say we give it one more minute and then we'll kick off. Ruth, Cheryl, I see you're here. I don't see Graham yet, but that's okay. All right, I say we kick it off. So, okay. So we'll start with. I'll also just start. We'll introduce ourselves a bit. Just hi, everyone on the stream. Hello, everyone. So welcome to this stream on. And we also have Graham joined. I'll add him in later. There's a couple of us here. I'm gonna go to the presentation and we'll start to introduce ourselves. Just a second. Okay. Gonna stop a couple of videos, adjust the setup, and we're gonna be off. All right. We have everyone. So, welcome everyone to this session on engineering your CV, engineering your career, engineering your resume. We're gonna be covering a couple of things today. We'll start with some housekeeping and some things that you should be knowing about. We'll then go into CV Insights. With our panel, who is here, we have four different people, including myself, representing a different size of a recruitment cycle. And then we're going to review some CVs. These are CVs that people have submitted to us through the meetup page. So they're real CVs, anonymized. And then we'll close with Q&A. So let's start with some housekeeping. First, if you'll have questions, feel free to add it to the chat. We're going to close with the Q&A session at the end. We'll see when we get there. It might be like around like 40 or 45 minutes. And if you'll have follow-up questions that we do not cover, please go to the meetup page, and this meetup page will have a link under the video. So with that, let's start off with some introductions, and I'll put the people who are introducing themselves on the screen. And before I jump to introductions, so we do have a wide range of panels. We have an agency recruiter, an in-house recruiter, and two hiring managers. And these are all people who can look at your resumes. So when you submit to an application, either of these people, or in fact, all of them could look into. So as we introduce ourselves, we'll also talk a little bit about what you need to know about these roles. So as a first off, let me ask Cheryl to introduce herself and let me put her on the screen as well.
Hello, everybody. So yeah, my name is Cheryl Burns. Quick introduction from me. So I work for Reed Technology based in Newcastle in the UK. I've recruited for the last 8.5 years. I've always worked in technology recruitment, and I've actually only ever recruited software developers and software testers. So that's my specialist area. And what that means is that I'm constantly reviewing CVs for software developers and people who work in the software space. And when I'm not reviewing CVs, I'm likely to be speaking to people, advising them, and speaking to hiring managers and talking them through CVs. So often I'm the middle person that links. I'd like to think hopefully I've got some things that I like to see that on CVs that I would like to share. But I know everybody's got some really good suggestions and some really good kind of advice so to go through on here. So hopefully what I want you to get from it is to see what goes on behind the scenes. So when you submit your CV, what conversations are going on? If you were a fly on the wall, what would you learn? This event, we've run it through my meetup group, which is Tech on the Tyne, and that's a software development led meetup in the northeast of England. And like they give something back to local community and give people the option to learn new things. So a bit different today because it's not a technical meetup, but hopefully you'll all get something from it. So thanks for coming.
Awesome. Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Cheryl. And let's introduce Ruth, and I'm just going to share her.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ruth Wood, Recruitment Coordinator at Newcastle Building Society. I have over 10 years' experience in the recruitment sector, both at agencies and in-house. My agency experience was working with energy companies and large financial organisations in an RPO model, delivering volume recruitment. And I moved in-house probably about 4 years ago now for Inchcape UK, which is a leading automotive retailer. We recruited staff for franchise dealerships across the UK there, for the likes of Audi, BMW, and Volkswagen. And then I moved to Newcastle Building Society just under a year and a half ago, where I mainly recruit for our IT positions, which fall under our Newcastle Strategic Solutions subsidiary. I was asked to be part of this just to give the perspective of an in-house recruiter, what we look for, how that's different to what the hiring manager looks for or the agency. And hopefully we'll be able to give you some really great insights that you can use moving forward to enhance your CV. Thank you.
That's awesome. Thanks very much, Ruth. And now let me bring up Graham, just one second.
Sorry, stop mute there. Hi, everyone. Yep. So my name is Graham Hetherington, and I work for MBS as well with Ruth. I work for the software subsidiary NSSL, as Ruth mentioned, and I work as an IT development manager. I currently look after software developers, and we work in a Scrum team environment and supporting a number of work streams. I've only been there for a short while after I moved there from Virgin Money. However, through both employments, I have looked after recruitment and I've been involved with it several times on different levels, you know, from graduate intake all the way through to managers. I've always enjoyed the recruitment side of things because we bring new skills and talent to the workplace. So it's really good to see different, you know, diverse experiences that people have and also what value they can bring to the role as well. You know, so it's really good to go through CVs and then to give you some insights as well, you know, as to what we look for from an IT development recruiting and hiring manager perspective. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Graham. And then let me do a bit of an introduction myself, and I'll bring myself up to the screen. We're just switching between screens here, so that's what you're seeing. Oh, where is my camera? Oh, here's my camera. All right. So, hey, everyone. I'm Gerge. So I've been a software engineer for quite a while, and I've been a hiring manager for about 5 years, a bit at Skyscanner, and most recently 4 years at Uber in Amsterdam. So today I'll bring some of this hiring manager part to the table. Hiring managers work closely with recruiters and sometimes agency recruiters. Agency recruiters are the staffing agencies that we might use. So a lot of times when, you know, people think, oh gosh, a recruiter rejected my resume, it might have not been the recruiter. It might have been the hiring manager who set certain expectations. And we'll give a little bit of a behind the scenes on how this whole process works. And with that, let's actually kick into that. Beforehand, if you're someone who currently does not have a job, I wrote a book called The Tech Resume Inside Out. It's probably the best book on software engineering resumes right now. It's not a big deal to do it because no one's writing books. The last one was written 10 years ago by Gail Lachman, called The Google Resume. But feel free to grab this if you've got a job. It's not free, but a lot of this content you can also find in blog posts, whatnot. So again, hopefully it helps for anyone who's either looking for a job or has graduated and is looking in there. We're going to kick off with some insights, some things that hiring managers don't find surprising and recruiters don't find surprising. But guess what? When you're looking for jobs, you don't know about these things a bunch of times. So, you know, if these things are obvious, well, you're going to be the minority, actually. And let's start with how the hiring system works. Now, when you submit your resume, what do you think your happens? Well, most people think, you know, it kind of your resume goes somewhere and a recruiter looks at it and you might get an interview. That's kind of true, but there's a lot more to the hiring process. Here's how a typical hiring process would look like at a big company where you get a lot of applications. Let's say a grad role at a large tech company or just a large company that's popular. When your application comes in, it starts with the applicant tracking system, which a lot of people would be afraid of and they think the robots filter it. It's nothing, it's a filing cabinet. Every single application will be kind of filed away digitally so that people can process it and look at it. Then a recruiter or a hiring manager or someone will look at it. At large tech companies, it might be recruiters, and they're gonna screen the resume. They're gonna read through that. And after the resumes that have gone through and they kind of look good for the position, they might do a callback. And then that's where the kind of hiring process starts, with the technical screen, with the onsite and the offer. We're not gonna go into those parts of the system. But what is important to know is you saw that massive number, 250 applications for a role. And out of that, you'll probably have 20 onsites. And these are kind of, you know, you cannot generalize the numbers, but I have seen similar numbers like this. It's worth keeping in mind that depending on the type of company you apply for, you'll see different things. And what I mean by that, just an example, for big tech, it's not uncommon to see these kind of numbers, especially for less specialized roles. So like, you know, 250 resumes for a role or even more, 500. I think Basecamp shared that when Basecamp is a company that hires, they pay San Francisco salaries for remotely. They have a great work culture. Whenever they post an opening, they get more than 1,000 resumes. So, you know, these popular and companies that are known to pay well and are great places to work will see an insane amount of applications. Smaller companies and startups usually see a lot fewer applications. So I've talked with several recruiters. Some actually see barely any applications. And these are the ones that they might be good places to work at, or they might have just raised funding, but no one knows about them. And a famous story is how the first mobile engineer got into Uber. There were just no applicants, and they hired him because he was good enough and he actually applied. They couldn't find anyone back in the day. And then there's also, let's not forget, the kind of mid-sized companies and also companies that might not be big tech. They typically don't see that many applications as the big tech companies. And they might also have a different, they might be looking for different skill sets. They might not be as fixated on having an amazing resume and so on. So just keep that in mind as you're applying. And one more thing that is really worth taking into account: people really focus on the contents of their resume, and that's a good thing. But there are some things that might be more important than just the contents of your resume. And these are things like having a referral or being local or not needing a visa. And now all of this has to do with how companies want to hire people, and they want to hire them quickly, and they want to hire people who are not likely to leave. So if you have a referral for someone who works at a company, that means you're actually more likely to accept the possible offer. And it also means you might be a better fit. So they will prioritize that. So as a hiring manager, if I have 100 resumes and of those five are referrals, I'll probably prioritize the referrals. Then companies will prioritize local candidates. And this is true even during COVID. So if you're a company let's say, Newcastle or in Amsterdam, in Amsterdam, we will prioritize candidates who are based in Amsterdam already, because we know that they will probably take the job. They don't have to move, and we don't need have any paperwork issues. Now, some companies are changing this during COVID, and they're being a lot more open to remote. Those companies will also see a lot more applications. And the next one is visas. And this is true even for COVID or not COVID. Certain companies are set up to employ people in certain countries. They might not employ contractors outside. And in that case, visa is a big issue. And this is true for especially for people, let's say, applying from outside of the EU or from certain countries. Like for American companies, it's very, very difficult to get visas for certain countries that are on the US embargo list. And it can take a process of up to 10 or 12 months to get a visa processed. It just takes more time. Even if you extend an offer, that person might turn it down. I have extended an offer at Uber for someone where we went through the process, we made them an offer, they were super excited. We went through the visa process, it was 3 or 4 months, and 3.5 months in, they said, it's taking so long, sorry, we're going somewhere else. So those are all things where, and what this means is, as a candidate, when you're applying, you definitely want to work on your resume, but do think about how you will be applying. Applying locally will have advantages. You will stand up probably from the crowd. Having a referral will also have an advantage for sure, because you will be considered more favorably, and not needing a visa will make it easier. The other way around, visa companies do sponsor visas, and different companies decide on when they do. Some small companies might not bother, large companies might do. But even for larger companies, when I worked at Uber, we did sponsor visas for roles that we could not fill locally. So for more junior people, we didn't do visas, but for more senior people, we might have on a case-by-case basis. And here, I wonder if any of you want to jump in, Cheryl or Ruth, and let me make sure that you're here, or Graham, before we move on.
Yeah, I could echo what you said there. I'm not sure if I'm on mute or not.
No, we can hear you, Cheryl.
Okay, great. I would echo that. So from an agency side, if I'm being paid, you know, money up front or paid a fee for finding the best person for the job, it definitely makes it more difficult if someone is out of the area. So just to back up your local point there, because, you know, I'm being paid to find someone, make it easier for the company. So I would always advise, if anyone is out of the area and you're not looking to relocate, or it's not clear on your CV you've got a genuine reason, I would always say you've got a better chance of getting the job applying directly to companies rather than through an agency. It's not always the case for some niche roles that are difficult to fill. If you do have a genuine reason to move to the area and you have a niche skill set, it's not like you'd never be considered. It would just be a lot more challenging going through an agency for that. So just from my side, again, it would echo the same as what you would say as a hiring manager in that case anyway.
Yeah, I'd like to come in on this as well. So I think depending on the company that you're working for as well, or that you're applying to, and they'll have different ideas about what they need. And I think with what probably the companies that me and Cheryl are working with, they're mainly working, you know, on site, don't really have a big sort of off-site team. I know that's changing quite a lot with COVID, but historically that's probably where we've been. And so we're really looking at it from our perspective on that. I think when we're wanting to recruit quickly, we'll look for the best option. And that might be someone outside of the area, especially as we sort of become more accustomed to remote working. But we as an organization do probably want people to come on site every so often and have a presence here, especially for the senior positions. We've also got to consider our company purpose, and our company purpose is really embedded in the community. So if you are in the region, you're likely to know about the work that we do, and also, you know, have maybe some of the same shared values as well. I think it's got a lot more to do with than just values and being on site. There's a greater likelihood of someone staying with the company longer if they're established in the region. And as you've already said, they are likely to start more quickly in a role than someone who needs to relocate or obtain a visa, which is something we need to consider from a business perspective, really. How quickly we can fill the position will affect how we implement our strategic plans. So it is a real balancing act of obtaining the right staff, not just in terms of skill set, but culture fit and all of the other things that go with it. But ultimately, us as an organisation, we want to recruit staff who can support us in delivering the best service possible for our customers and clients. So we will consider anyone who's suitable for the role, but I think you're probably right. There is, you know, a bit of an edge if you are local to the company, especially if they predominantly work on site.
Awesome. And with that, let's talk
about... Can I add something as well?
Of course, Graham. Yeah.
I was just going to mention, mostly don't forget about the power of social media as well. Social media for me when I was applying, you know, for the role at NSSL was really important, you know, and also that is one of the ways that we use to advertise, you know, positions, you know, but don't be afraid to reach out to the recruiter, you know, see who the hiring manager is to complement, obviously, your application through the CV, you know, just to check that you're suitable for the role or just to, you know, maybe you weren't quite sure if the role was quite for you. So it's really important, you know, to reach out to get that additional context, to get the background as well. And also it might help you direct the format of your CV, you know, if you do have a conversation around exactly what the role is about. I have found that valuable, like a valuable experience.
Awesome. Well, thanks for all the input. Let's talk about CV matching for the role. And I'm going to ask Cheryl to start with some of her thoughts on this one. And then we'll all chime in.
I think I was going to sort of pick this one up. I'm not sure.
Oh, so sorry.
The other area.
Yes.
So I think matching your CV to the role is really important. Adapting your CV, it might sound like a chore, but at this level, when you're trying to reach those sort of senior positions, we wouldn't be expecting you to apply for hundreds of jobs. When you're just starting out in your career, trying to get your foot in the door, you might apply to lots of different companies. And so adapting your CV each time might not be practical. But when you're already established in your role and you're looking to take your career to the next step, it's likely that you will be seeking out a specific position, perhaps even with a particular company to apply to. And this is where changing your CV will be really beneficial. You should be doing a bit of research into the company, reading the job profile and the advert, and pulling from this the key requirements of the role. Tech stacks, for instance, you might look at a stack on an advert and think, yes, I've got all of the experience in that, so I'll apply. But what you should actually be doing is thinking, they've specifically mentioned this technology, so I'm going to make it clear on my CV that I've got that experience or knowledge. From a recruiter perspective, I won't have all of the technical knowledge, but I will have had a briefing with the hiring manager around the key things they're looking for in a potential candidate. So if I receive a CV and that requirement is clearly listed, I'm likely to put them forward for the role. And, you know, adapting your CV in other ways, so maybe for culture fit as well. You know, having the same values, as we mentioned before, can be quite important. And it should be important to the applicant as well as obviously to the company. If your values align with the company's values, then you could maybe highlight that in your personal statement. And I would say, like, you don't need to be obvious about that. But if the advert says that they're looking for someone who's forward thinking, then maybe you could mention how you like to keep up with advancing technology, maybe through self-study or attending seminars, tech seminars. That'll obviously show your connection and how right you are for sort of the position as well. I've seen loads of CVs over the years where the applicant has used the same CV for all of their applications, and it can be very telling. For instance, in their personal statement, it says they want to have a career in test, but then they've applied for a service desk role. I mean, immediately I'm going to think of it as a recruiter that this is not something they're really interested in. It's maybe a stopgap. We're going to have to recruit for this position in a few months when they've you know, found the role that's right for them. So, you know, that then them little things like that, they sound like basic mistakes, but I've seen it at all levels. And it really highlights the importance of adapting your CV for the role that you're applying to. The key to adapting your CV, I would say, would be to keep it truthful, but to make sure that the person reading the CV is aware of your suitability for the position. It's something that can really, you know, make the difference. And I've seen it happen many times.
Awesome. Anyone else want to chime in on this one? Because I'll just add a few thoughts similar to you. Because I think, you know, Ruth, what you said, like you mentioned that this goes all the way from, let's say, service desk jobs to everywhere. And the number one advice I give to people, the number two advice, number one is get a referral if you can, especially when you're applying for large tech companies that have a lot of applicants. The number two is if you're submitting the same, like if you apply for 10 jobs, you should have 10 resumes. You should filter for the job description. The reason being is you're kind of thinking, I'm me, and this is who I am, and this is what the company should want me for. And you're kind of right. But at the same time, as a hiring manager, I'm opening a role, and I know I need this Android engineer who will do this and this on this team, and maybe someone left, so I want to replace them. I know exactly what I want, and I will put it in the job description. And I will tell my recruiter, prioritize the people who look like a better fit for this job. And in that description, again, some companies might emphasize things like, you know, like having hands-on experience with testing or being interested in good engineering practices. Now, if you submit your same resume to a company that is talking about good engineering practices and one that emphasizes, let's say, Java, for the Java one, you probably want to put saying, oh, I have this much Java experience first. For the other one that is about engineering practices, you probably would just want to start with that. Just a small thing, changing the order, it can make a difference. And increasingly, the higher the competition, the more these things matter. If you're the only applicant and no one else is applying, people are going to read your resume and they'll probably give you a call anyway. But if you're in a pile of 100 applicants, if you took the time to tailor for that one, it will make a difference. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to get a call back, but just this is an important one to do. All right, so let's move on to personal statement. And I'm going to ask Cheryl to share your thoughts on this one.
Sure. So when we first discussed this one, I just sort of realized people might have a different idea of what a personal statement is. So I think when we were talking about a personal statement about this event and what's important, we were thinking about a personal statement that would be included on the CV. So maybe like a personal statement or profile summary at the top of the CV. But I know some people do add an actual sort of cover note or personal statement as well. Personally, again, as a recruiter, I like to just open one document, something all on the same page that I can sort of sieve through and read easily. So I don't think it needs to be War and Peace, a personal statement, but I do think it needs to be concise. For me, what I like to see, the top of your CV, a little summary of your experience and what you're looking for. So like Ruth and Gerge have highlighted, make sure it is relevant for the role first and foremost, and yeah, make it clear what you're looking for, because it does have to align. I know I've got some example CVs to run through that I've been looking at before, but things just that we can go through some real life examples. But as some general tips for personal statement, I would say avoid anything too cliche. So, you know, you might be hardworking, reliable, trustworthy, but it does sound a bit boring. I know that sounds harsh, but it's what a lot of people put time and time again. So if you can try and think of something honest, truthful, but maybe something that's come from you more than just, you know, a list of qualities that someone's told you would make you come across great on a CV. So if you can share something maybe about yourself, or, you know, what your career goal is, how you like to work even, obviously make it relevant to the role, perhaps what drives you. I think they are a lot more valuable than a list of qualities that, yeah, you've just picked that, you know, are generally positive things to say about yourself. I would try and make it more, yeah, more specialist if you can. Show personality, but not, don't go to the extreme as well. So I've seen some that, you know, really might give too much information. So there is a balance and act, and I am aware that that might be contradicting what I've just said. So yeah, show your personality, but not too much. But what you do have to remember is you want a company that suits you as a person. And yeah, I think you want to show a little bit of yourself. Yep. And hopefully that will align to that what the hiring manager wants to see as well. And if you're working with a good recruiter, they can, you know, I'll give my candidates an insight on what I think, whether I think they will be a good match for the role, and yeah, if something would put them off. So for example, I give an example for development software role. I've got one client who I recruit for, notoriously difficult to please. But I know if I ask a candidate, when you're programming, how do you like to work? If they only want to put the headphones in and code away, that would be fantastic for a lot of companies. Not for this company. This company really thrive on collaboration and working together as a team, and they do pair programming, and that would put them off. So yeah, I think it is important, if you want to get the role that's right for you, to be honest, share how you like to work, and yeah, make it personal. It's called a personal statement, so yeah, the cues and the clue is in the title. But yeah, that's just some tips at the moment. We can go through more detail when we get to the CVs, but hopefully that helps.
Yeah, and I just want to call out one thing that Cheryl mentioned here. You might have heard her seen that it's hard to please the client. Did you notice that she's talking from the perspective of the agency recruiter? And again, there's in-house recruiters who work for the company. Let's say you apply to Uber, you're going to get an in-house recruiter or an in-house sourcer. But if you apply, some companies, either people don't know about them and they don't know how to apply them. So if you live in Newcastle, you might use read.co.uk to connect with people like Cheryl, who would then look through your resume, and then they might call you back saying, hey, I've got all these different clients who are looking for positions. And you can see how that is a different ballgame. A personal statement will matter a lot more when you're working with a recruiter like this or a recruitment agency. Whereas if you apply for a big tech company where there's hundreds of people going through, we won't care too much about your personal statement. We'll care more about the achievements and impact that I'll talk about. But I just want to just highlight already on how big of a difference it can mean on, are you going through an agency? What is your seniority? How many people are you competing with? When you're a really senior person going through an agency, a personal statement will probably make all the difference. But in this session, you'll probably see that's why there's multiple of us. We'll bring different perspectives, and sometimes we're going to contradict each other. So I'm going to say, if you're applying for Stripe or Facebook, forget about the personal statement. That's not going to get you through the door. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that you should not do it in other places. So with that, let's move on to personal brand. And I'm going to ask Graham to share some thoughts and expertise.
Oh, I think you've left me on the screen. No, Graham.
Thank you. Personal brand. Yeah, so personal brand should... It applies not only for the CV, but also in the workplace and I guess outside as well. You know, so think about everybody should know what you do, and also can they articulate to others what you do? You know, it's important that your brand sticks with them. Other people on the forum, you know, to spread the word on what you do as well. You know, so make sure you stand out from the crowd. Think about what are your unique values. Use your voice in their networks or interviews or anywhere, or like through the CV, you know, through the personal statement. Have the same messaging as well across all forums. You know, think about how your CV's worded, think about LinkedIn, think about network and forums. You know, make sure that your LinkedIn profile is actually on your CV as well. And also from the brand point of view, you know, think about building that up. Again, this is outside the CV world, but think about recommendations, you know, through LinkedIn. Write blogs about your thoughts relating to your field, or start a blog. You know, follow experts in your field and share their posts with their positive comments. You know, so they can see how you tick, and other people who are looking at you and on social media can see how you tick as well. Think about what makes a good brand. And a good brand is reliable and memorable and has a strong value, same quality and trust. You know, so you need to ooze that within your CV and then through your interviews and through your career progression. Think about how others understand you. You know, consider what the employer would want you to do for them as well. You know, so put yourself in the employer's shoes. Show an understanding of who you are and what you do. You know, so think about how you show you within your CV and then beyond. And also have a bit of a strategy as well. You know, so set yourself apart from others and think about what special talents you have, how best you can use them. And also recall on the times when you have actually performed at your best. And also be aware, obviously be self-aware as well when performing tasks. You know, so it's important to have a strategy as to how you deliver your personal brand. And I'm not sure, Cheryl, did you have a couple of points?
So definitely agree with all those things. Sometimes those things are not apparent from your CV. So yeah. For me, I would just say make sure that they're there. So if you do get involved in the local community with meetups, I've had candidates I've asked them if they've done any mentoring and leadership, and they've said, oh, well, I volunteer my time at a code club at my kid's school. And I say, well, that's not on your CV. So make sure that if you're doing these things, you know, that you are putting them on there. And just bear in mind, people are likely to Google you, you know, if they are interested. So especially for, you know, developers, do you have anything on GitHub? Have you committed work on there? Have you kept it active? Are you contributing? And if you're not, fine. But just be aware of everything sort of ties in. So this personal brand, you want to make sure it's a running theme and make sure it does come across in your CV as well. Yeah. So
we just had a question from Hessam asking more contribution on LinkedIn or Twitter from our perspective. Any of you have thoughts? I have some thoughts, but you can go first.
Yeah, I like to say a bit of, something. I think, you know, it depends what role, but if you're going for a senior role, if you want to be a senior position, you want to be a thought leader, then I think you do have to share some thoughts and, you know, put things out there, not just like what other people have shared. But obviously there is the other extreme, and, you know, some people maybe overshare or put too much on. So I think I would say if you share in a Twitter account and it's a professional one, you know, keep it professional to an extent. Talk about technologies, events you've attended. I don't know how relevant it'll be sharing what you've had for your dinner or, you know, what your pet's up to. But then again, some people like to see that. If you've got a same breed of dog as somebody, you know, the hiring manager, it could work in your favour. So I don't know what you think about that, Graham.
Yeah, sometimes it can show a bit of humanness, can't it? But obviously don't go too far with it, yeah.
And for the LinkedIn part, the only two parts I have is, first of all, when recruiters search on LinkedIn in the recruiter one, when you have a more active profile, you will be closer to the top of the list, and that's for sourcing. So that can help you, especially when you're more senior, when you're more likely to be so-called headhunted. Following companies helps. So when you follow a company, you're actually ranked higher. So again, that helps you be found by what we call sourcers, who are dedicated people at large tech companies who are looking for people. So when we open a senior distributed backend system position, our sources will go out and look for these people. On the other hand, I think a lot of people underestimate how important or how effective like sharing things on Twitter or LinkedIn can be. They can be really good career boosters, but they're not going to get you into this dream company that you're dreaming of, like Google or Facebook or whatnot. They might actually help you connect with people who later they might have a friend who's doing a gig and want something. You'll probably get a lot more of those. So I think, you know, like growing your sharing your expertise, it doesn't hurt. It improves your writing. I think long form writing is underrated for software engineers. Very few people write insightful blogs. Sometimes interviewers pick up on that, but as with anything, you cannot expect that one single thing will make that difference. And with that, I suggest we get to the CV reviews. Let's cover the last part, which is context, achievements, and impact. And I'm going to ask Ruth to chime in here. I'm going to put you on the screen.
Thanks. Yeah, I think context, I think this slide's quite really important for sort of moving from a basic or entry level role, sorry, to a more senior position. Context for me is the key difference between basic CV and more advanced CV. I would suppose thinking around tech stacks again, some people will list everything they've worked with, old, new, relevant, not so relevant. And although it gives us a snapshot of their experience, it doesn't tell us anything about how they've actually used that tech. I think it was one of the CVs we were looking for when we were discussing actually doing this sort of seminar. And the guy who put his CV forward had told Cheryl and I that the tech he had listed was things that he felt completely comfortable with, the sort of tech that he'd had most exposure to. He really felt that that showed his best experience and thought we would read it as such. But me and Cheryl found that we actually had more questions from that. So when did you work with that tech? Was it in your first job or your most recent position? How much experience have you had with it? And were you working on it day to day, or have you just had a little bit of training in it? I suppose we look at CVs with a skeptical eye, challenging sort of the validity of the information provided to ensure that we are putting the best candidates forward. So context, therefore, is where you can make a really, really successful CV. I think what it shows is that you shouldn't presume the reader will understand why you've included something. Making sure you have the context will keep that clear. And you will see from the example CVs that we've got how to incorporate context into your CV. And I would say there's definitely still room for listing your knowledge or experience, but providing the context around it will really enhance your CV and give you sort of a higher chance of being considered in a strong applicant market. Context is where you identify the value that you deliver in your role. So in the descriptions of your position, you should be acknowledging not only the day-to-day basic aspects of the role, but what you contributed while you were in that position as well. So for instance, instead of saying working with Azure and moving on to the next point, you should be saying working with Azure to do this, which resulted in this. And the context there will show your skills, the level that you're working at, your achievements and the impact you had on the company as well. It gives the recruiter, so me and Cheryl, more of a reason to advance your CV. And it gives the hiring manager a much clearer picture of your skills and how they would fit into the team and the role they're recruiting for, which would spark their interest in speaking with you further.
Yep. And then for like one thing that I'd like to add here is on achievements and impact. And this is especially true for larger tech companies or larger companies that are they're very much about impact, about people getting things done. And examples are Facebook, Google, even probably Microsoft. At these places, engineers are expected to take initiative and get things done. And you, a lot of companies are like this, actually. Like, industry is changing. And what a hiring manager expects to see on resumes for anything that is above a junior level is to see that you have been proactive and you've helped the business achieve goals. And when I say the businesses can sound crazy, but yeah, if you worked, you know, at a startup, like, did you, if you say that you've shipped a project or you built a complex project, that's nice, but did it move the needle or how complex was it? Can you give specifics? And this is where having numbers is really important. Very few software engineers have numbers on their CV. How many engineers did you work with? How many modules was it? How many months did the project take? What percentage did you decrease error rates by? If you refactored a module or you moved from a monolith, how many microservices? So like how many? And there's a lot of examples online for numbers that you can have. And being specific, talking about what technology you used in that project. Now that's relevant. A lot of people just list all the technologies that you know up there. But if you list, you know, you can list it up there. But if you talk about what technologies you use at each role, that gives an idea for the hiring manager or the recruiter of how up-to-date you might be with that thing. And this is especially important if it plays in your favor. Again, some companies look for technology expertise. A lot of large tech companies don't really, but you want to see that people are somewhat hands-on with things. So the more specific you can have and more impact you have, the better. And we have a question about how if you write all the context achievements and impacts, how do we fit it into the CV? And my take is I'll go first as well. That is the good question. And this is where, well, first, this is where tailoring your CV does matter. if you're applying for a company that is about distributed systems, let's say a role, and you've done some of that, well, put those on there. If you're applying for a different one, which is more of a full stack role and you've done some full stack, put those ones first and maybe list some of them lower. I have seen interns who are unable to, or junior engineers who just put everything, and you don't really want more than a few bullet points per thing. This is where you need to balance, and this is where tailoring your resume will really help. If you tailor for every position, you'll succeed. If you submit the same CV for everywhere, you'll ultimately fail, and it'll be just quite crowded. Tal, we're going to get into resume critique right after this one. So I think anything else, or should we just jump into resume critique, and a lot of this will be...
I think it'll become clear when we go through the CVs.
All right, so we're...
So should be sharing my screen now. Can you see that? Yeah, I don't know how well it is to see that. You might want to make the resume bigger and me smaller. Yeah, hopefully that'll help. So I'll read some key points. So this is an example of one of the CVs that were sent. So just to give you a little insight, if I was opening this CV, I'd have a quick flick through, read through. I'd probably give it a 10-second just scan over first, so I can see technologies there. So his job title, he's been a senior software engineer, he's a junior developer, then a senior. So I'd have a quick flick just to make sure, has he got, if this is for a senior role, which that's the level he is, does he have experience as a senior? I can see quickly, yes. Look at these companies he's worked for. Sometimes do I recognize them? Do I know them? And then I'll flick back up and go through it in a bit more detail. So I think from my side, I do a quick filter first, which is where kind of format, I think, comes in and making things obvious to stand out. And then I'll go in and look at the detail once I know that it's a relevant CV. So when I was talking about personal statement earlier, this is probably slightly longer than what most people would have. You probably can't read it all because I think it is a little bit small. But the reason why I picked this one, I like the personal statement. So he's got... listed in here, it starts with, I'm a developer driven by quality of code and software. I'm continuously striving to improve myself and look for opportunities to help my team grow. And then further down, he said he likes to think about big picture questions, like how do we know if we're developing the right thing, and build a shared understanding of why. My career goal is to work into a team leadership role, and ultimately, I want to build cool things with cool people. So I picked this. I like this one because it wasn't generic. It's not, I'm hardworking, reliable, and passionate about technology. You know, you can feel the passion from reading that. And it gives a bit of an insight, you know, ultimately, I want to build cool things with cool people. So I thought that was quite a nice human kind of touch as well. So I really like that start. I can see he's got the location clear at the top there. He's got a link to his LinkedIn, mobile number, email address. This bit's quite interesting from what Ruth was saying before. So I do like having a skills matrix, which is great. There's a lot on there. And when I've obviously seen this CV before because I've looked at it before this event, but he only mentions the technologies here. So when Ruth was talking before, that's great. You've got, you know, experience with agile methodologies. You've used JavaScript and TypeScript. But when you scroll down onto his day-to-day experience, he hasn't cross-referenced them. So our critique of this CV I think he needs to highlight where he's used what technology. So whether that's just technologies used and put them in bold underneath each job. I think that would make it much stronger because I've actually got this person a job in the past and this was the CV that he presented and I liked it. I called him, but I asked him for more information. I think that was my main critique. He does have a lot of the achievements that we've been talking about, which is really good. So he has gave context and talked about the projects that he's worked on. So just to improve quality by delivering continuous integration. He's talked about a lot of the sort of approaches that he's took, the type of architecture that he's used, and a lot about leadership, but actually it doesn't really say how hands-on he is, because he hasn't included anything about the technologies, when I know that 80-90% of his role's hands-on. So Ruth mentioned earlier, make it obvious, you know, assume that the person reading it doesn't know what you do. And I did speak to the person who submitted this CV actually, and he said, oh really, like I thought that was obvious, and actually looking at it from your eyes I can see why you might have thought that. The other thing just to mention, he's put a lot of information here. He was at this company for a long time. He's got the dates clearly listed, which is good. I would say less information, more information on your more recent role, less information on previous positions, in general, because that is quite a lot of information. But overall, I would say that's a good CV. It would definitely get past me and my desk, and it would get over to sort of Ruth and the internal team, and then Graham and Gerge would have it. So they were my kind of insights, things that I liked and things that maybe I could improve on. I don't know if anybody's got anything to add to that one at all.
Yeah, I think the same with you, the skill set and the technologies and tools. It's great that he's got it on there, but the way that it takes up a lot of space, and then he hasn't told us any more context around it. So I would maybe make that, shorter, make it a little bit more concise, and then maybe bring the technologies he's used and the skill set he has into the actual descriptions of his roles, just so we know where it aligns to, because we don't know in this area if he's used some of the technologies on there in his first or last role. So it would be good to know how much experience he does have in that technology. But yeah, I would probably still put this CV through as well. From a hiring manager perspective, do you guys have anything that you would like to add?
Yeah, and a quick question.
I think it shows a really good use of like the headline words. You know, so it's, it always like starts off with like a bit of like a big hitter, in terms of like each of the bullets, you know, from the current and the previous roles, like championed, transformed, improved, promoted, architected, led, facilitated. You know what I mean? There's no messing about with the statements. They're all really clear in terms of what this, in terms of what this person can deliver or has experience of. I think that's one of the things that stood out.
Yep. And then from
especially I guess in a senior position as well, you know, you want people who can take some of the lead, who can drive things forward. You know, they're not just going to take instructions, they've actually got some ownership and some thought leadership.
Yep.
And they are the kind of things that you need to show in the CVs.
Yeah, and then just from my perspective, so first of all, the more senior you are, the more you can get away with, apologies, this is like going everywhere, the more you can get away with a bunch of like not having as well formatted of a resume. This like, it's hard to read. The personal statement is very, very long. But again, if you go to an agency or recruiter, this might be fine because they will read it and there are not too many senior people going there. But yeah, a lot of buzzwords. The first page doesn't tell you much. So if this person was applying for a more competitive place, let's say to a Facebook or to a Google, they would need to tighten this up a lot, get rid of the personal statement or shorten it significantly, and start with, on the first page, having your last few roles, not having more than, let's say, 7 bullet points per role, and also customizing it. So, but again, this person has a lot of depth. So when you have a lot of depth and a lot of skills, then you can actually polish your CV and it makes it a bit easier. And we had a question, which I'll just take here because it's relevant. Can the resume be more than one pages? Typically, this depends on the company as well. For US companies, usually up to a few years of experience, you should fit on one page. It's kind of the expectation. In Europe, it's a bit more loose, but for when you don't have much experience, so when you're out of college, it should just be one page. The more senior you are, the more it's fine to go longer. Typically, try not to go more than two pages, and make sure that on the first page, you deliver the punch. So you have your latest experience, and you tailor it for a bit for the role. That's my take on that one. I think as we go, we can reflect on this question as well on the next resume. Should we head to the next resume?
Yeah. Let me just find it. I think that's number four. Yeah, you can tell I'm not the technical one on this webinar, but here we go. Number two.
Don't worry about it.
So I think Ruth, you're going to take the lead on this one.
Yeah, so I think just to answer the questions as well that's been in the chat, yes, these are CVs that have been submitted to us from the forums that you've joined. We have had a quick look at them beforehand just to make sure that they were anonymized and you know, no personal details were coming out, but they are from the true CVs. We haven't made these up. So this one, yeah, I think this is actually a really, really good CV. I really enjoyed looking at it. His personal profile is, pretty short, but it tells you exactly what you want to know. He's currently working as a senior back-end developer specializing in Scala. So, it tells you what he's working on. He's worked on high-profile services used by millions of individuals. So he's given the context. So the context before, I think there was a question where it's, how do you put the context in a CV when you only try and put it in two pages? It's not about the amount of context, it's whether or not the context is relevant. So he does that perfectly within his personal profile. Then he's got his skills listed, and again, he's got them listed, but it's quite concise. It doesn't take up too much room. And he's also listing the skills, but then the technologies he's used to back that up as well. So I think that's given a lot of information and it's making it very clear what he's worked on previously. Again, I'm all about the context. So he's put that there. I'd be then looking to see if he's put more context in the information about each role, which you can see that he has actually done. He's got his, most recent or current position at the top of the page, which is his most relevant experience to the position that he's applying to, what should be. And he's telling me how long he's been there, where he's based, and in the context, he's telling me the impact that he had. He was at the heart of the business transformation in a data-driven technology company. So he's telling me that the company is data-driven. So does that align with what we're looking for? He was at the heart of business transformation. And then he's said what technologies he's used and why he's used them as well. So he's used Scala to create a core identity data store. So, he hasn't got huge amount for each role, but what he does have is really, really relevant and gives a great overview as to what he's worked on and the impact he's had there. He also tells me, about his other positions, and as you notice, towards the bottom of the page, as you scroll down, the second page, the information he's provided for each role becomes shorter. And that's because obviously with time passing, it isn't as relevant as the most recent position that he's had. I like that he's got his education at the bottom as well. And that's just because some companies you do need to have, degrees or certain qualifications. So it's good to have that on. The only thing I would say that would maybe be missing from this would be any sort of professional qualifications that he's completed since his degree. But because of the context that he's given us and how he's worked and what he's used, I don't think it's as relevant in this. It would just be a nice to have rather than a sort of requirement on this particular CV. I really liked it, but I mean, what do you guys think?
When I seen it, my only criticism that stood out to me was, I like the layout, is that he went from, job title-wise, he went from a lead developer in 2018 to a senior software engineer. And I know job titles don't matter, like a lead at one company could be a senior at another. But I would be quite keen to find out whether he stepped down, whether it was a step down, maybe he didn't want the leadership, whether he wants something hands-on, or whether... it was because I can see he's moved from Newcastle to London, so maybe, I don't know, he was more classed as a senior in that company. So I would probably be looking for something in his personal profile here to say what he's looking for. So does he want to be a lead, or does he want to be a senior? You know, is his reason for leaving because he wants to step up? So maybe just, yeah, what career-wise, like, what type of role he's looking for. But I agree, I like the CV.
And I guess Cheryl just said, like, this is probably dependent on the job advert as well, right? For some of them, you might not need to do it. For some, you might need it. But it sounds like this would not be a barrier for you. I guess
the challenge would be on the achievements. You know, do I think, are there enough achievements shown as opposed to, you know, completing tasks? So I think if I was giving somebody advice, I would say focus on the achievements, you know, that you can bring out of, like, of each employment.
Yep, and that's what I would.
You know, did he change anything materially? Did he implement any new directions or any upgrades, any new technologies? You know, think about things that you can, you know, really sell yourself at.
Oops, apologies. We've lost your screen, Cheryl. Okay, awesome. Well, that's going to be here. And yeah, I think my only feedback, once the screen is back up, but even until then, is this, we're at the next one. Yeah, but for the previous one, what Graham said, achievements, we didn't see any numbers there. So that would have been a bonus. Oh, that would have been a nice tab, but it was, the layout was very pleasant and easy to see. All right, should we go to our next resume?
So thank you for sending that.
And we're going to have Graham go on this one? Or who wants to go on this one?
Do you want to start?
Okay, is that ready to go?
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. So, yeah, obviously the format in terms of, you know, the different sections looks good. I think the personal statement, it's a little bit vanilla. I think I'd expect to see it tailored to suit the particular role that the person's going for. And obviously, they mentioned that they're highly motivated, like problem solving, and all that good stuff. But it doesn't actually say how their skills.
I'm just ruining the format.
Sorry,
I was just ruining the format there. That's fine.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. So just on the personal statement, it is quite vanilla. Obviously, you would expect it to be that, you know, the selling point that the applicant really wants to share. You know, why they're suitable for the role. And yeah, it does mention some attributes, but it doesn't really cover the key skills, the key achievements within those few sentences. I've seen this table format used before for the key skills, and it works well. You know, I think especially because they've given themselves, like, I guess, a bit of like a rating in terms of the skill level.
What do you think about this rating, Graham?
Lines, but I guess that might be nitpicking a little bit. And then if we go into employment history. It does have a little bit of overlap with the skill table, and also I think Emma have sort of brought this up previously as well, that it doesn't really mention a huge amount of achievements, and also if it used a few more like the punchy words like deliver high quality software solutions and agile methodology. They're talking about engaging and liaising with different stakeholders. That's great, but you could say how you influenced or you collaborated or facilitated discussions or and we're working through issues and solutions. You know, so just think of those keywords. Again, the second bullet, obviously great that the mentoring, but you could say that you successfully mentored and how you developed the skills. On the third bullet, you know, was there any research undertaken? You know, did he take something from a different language, you know, to C# or .NET MVC? You know, did he upgrade? I guess they mentioned a .NET course. So, you know, did he take the department or the applications on a journey? You know, you can mention that if it is a particular achievement that you've made. You know, so always look for the achievements as you want to talk about the tasks and the, you know, the work that you've done. And yeah, I think I would say as well, there is a little bit of duplication, you know, with the skills a table. So if you can think about how you could bring the skills to life when you mention them. Also this, I think as a hiring manager, it's a little bit difficult to, you know, to read through. There are quite a lot of words, you know, so think about how you know, if you can try and condense some of the words used as well. On the next one, the second page, the technical lead. Again, that's almost like a list of tasks or like, you know, things which you did. So again, if you can try to draw out the achievements. And then I think the next one I was going to mention was about, I think it was the last role, like the MS SQL Server developer. So that person's worked there for 5 years, about, you know, 16 to 12 years ago. If you can think about what's relevant now, you know, so it's great mentioning that you create e-marketing newsletters and all that good stuff. But, you know, if you can think, is it relevant for the role and how's it going to sort of impress the hiring manager? And obviously all within that, think about how you're selling yourself as a senior software engineer or developer. A professional qualifications, that's great. Obviously shows, you know, that you've been keen to do some training and that you've, you know, you want to share what you've done. And I think on the education one, I've usually seen a bit more of a breakdown for like the graduate and like the lower level entry positions. But I would say if you want to keep it to 2 pages, you know, try and make it just like the actual degree, maybe the time scales. I think that's all that we're really interested in, especially on a senior position. You know, it's great that you've got, it's great that you have the degrees. It may well be part of the entry requirements. You know, but I would say just to save a bit of space, you don't need to list out everything unless it's absolutely relevant, you know, for the role and you want to sort of highlight something. I'll say just as a rule of thumb, you don't need a breakdown of the whole degree course. I don't know if anybody else had anything.
I was going to jump in because I like this one for, I like how this, just a simple thing, the skills are in bold and the skills are listed what have been used in each job. So it's quite easy to see where they've used C#, where they've used MVC, where they've used VB, or so rather than just, oh, I'm proficient or excellent or expert, you know, at this, you can see where they've used them. So whilst I definitely agree, this person could maybe shout about themselves a bit more, you know, show off what achievements they have done. I think it's, if you were scanning this through and having a quick look, it's quite clear to see what they've used, when they've used it, they've progressed the career, you know, from a sort of developer up to technical lead, senior software engineer. So I do like this one as well. I like the bold. I think it's easy, a little bit easier. Easy on the eye. If you scanned it, you get a quick snapshot of what they've done. But yeah, I definitely agree about the more on the achievement side. And probably like what you said, less information about the last role.
I was just going to say, I think me and Cheryl probably have a different perspective where we're seeing so many CVs that we like to see things really, really clear. Sort of a different way, but it does make it quite clear. But I think, you know, if he's using it with providing better sort of context around his achievements, you can slip that in without having to make it bold, and we'll still be able to get the information from them. But you know, with more of the information that the hiring managers would want to see as well. I quite like, although it seems a little bit dated, the skill level. So he's got the obviously the skill category languages. He's told us the skills that he's got, C#, and then he's told us what level he's at. I think this could be useful for sort of me and Cheryl in the fact that if we know that, you know, we need some, say we need Docker to be advanced level, we would look at that and say beginner, okay, he's not right for this role, but he might be right for another position that we've got. So we would know that, and maybe it's useful for us. So I think this goes to show that CV can be interpreted differently by different people, and it's just about getting that sort of balance between the two, making sure the information's there for the hiring manager, but making sure everything's clear for the sort of recruiter as well, who mightn't have the granular sort of technology background, but who has got an overview of the technologies that we're looking for. I don't think it's a bad CV by any stretch of the imagination, but there's definitely room for certain improvements, very much along the lines of what Graham said.
Yeah, and sorry, I just wanted to add, I think for 7 years almost in the current role, I think you'd like to see a bit more than the current employment history.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then I'm just going to add a differing viewpoint here completely. I'm going to say if you're applying for any large tech company, this is a terrible CV. And this will go against anything you've seen for a couple of reasons. Like those companies don't really focus on the languages. This is a resume that has been written for someone, it seems, who is looking for specific jobs with specific languages. So this might be consultancies. This might be companies who value, you know, who are C# shop. You can see this person has there. When you're, I'm absolutely not a fan of leveling yourself, like judging yourself as skilled, expert, all those things. Just put anything that you're proficient with, and when you apply to these companies, this would be irrelevant. We just, like, those companies would assume that you know how to code in various languages, and then the bolding would work in your favor. So this just shows on how, depending on where you apply, a different format would work differently. And again, I think we're hearing different opinions, but for me, it's also, if you're applying for a large tech companies or startups or hip companies, this format screams that it's 15 years old, and it just shows that you're not keeping up with the latest even formats. You know, that table will, you will get on subconscious biases of from your resume for some people potentially. So again, the reason I'm saying this opinion, because it varies from hiring manager to recruiter, which is why a lot of people will think, why is it so difficult to get a job? You're now hearing these four different people, the agency recruiter, in-house recruiter, a hiring manager, Graham, myself. Sometimes we're not agreeing on the same things even. And this is the reality of hiring for better or worse. There is no perfect resume. This is why it is good to tailor for that given position. So with that, I think this might be a good segue into the last resume. If we can share that, Cheryl, and I'll do it. So this is a resume. This is a question of do we have junior resumes, and this is the most junior resume we have. We can give a lot more feedback for people with more experience. In general, for people who don't yet have job experience or have less experience, you should get the book that I have. It's free for you. Just request it. You'll get it approved. That market is obviously the less experience you have, the more competitive the market is. Everyone knows that software engineering is a great place to be, and tons of people are going into it. It's going to be an uphill struggle, and you will need to be creative and standing out in various ways. But again, the book will probably help you with a certain thing, and it's free if you don't yet have a job. So just grab it. So this is an Android engineer who submitted it, and it's from Iran, and it's from someone who has 3 years of experience. So the first thing that I glance on, and it's just one thing to add, is this person is from, let's say, outside of the EU and from a country that does have, unfortunately, very strict regulations, let's say, for US companies. So one thing is, not many people will have this, but if you're in a country, visas will work against you. And for some companies, they just might put you to the bottom of the pile, because it's not that you might need a visa, but you might need a very special visa that will be reserved for people who they really want to hire. And the other part is, this person has 3 years of experience. So visas will, companies will typically consider visas for people who they cannot hire. So this person probably will need visas for a lot of countries. It will just mean that it might be a lot higher. It's going to be tough to even get into, because to be on that first line, because people know you only need a visa and you're not a senior yet. You don't have 5 years or so. And that's where a lot of people put this mental role. So that's a bit of background. That's where for any resume like this, having a referral will be very, very helpful, because then you might at least get there. Or trying to find companies that do sponsor visas that are not overwhelmed with applications. Now let's go to the contents of it, because the contents are relevant. There's a summary which is good. It mentions scalable mobile applications, so this person is focusing on things. They list their skills, which seem up to date, like it's a bunch of modern technologies. On the work history, we have a bunch of bolding here and there, but some of the bolding actually highlights some good thing. I'm not a huge fan of bolding in line, I'll be honest, but you know, you can do it. They bold out some of the things, the tools that they work for. But for example, if you look at the second line, improve Dagger graphs through scoping rules and optimize memory allocation, better object reusability, and better lifecycle management, you're bolding the whole line. there are three words that are not bolded in it. So just be careful with the bolding. One thing, the bolding is inconsistent. Sometimes you're bolding the 30% reduction I really like, so I like to see numbers. So again, this depends on the companies you apply for, but I like to see impact, so that's good. So my feedback will be less bolding, be more clear on your impact. It's good. There are some advanced things here. So you know, like I'm a mobile engineer, so I know that if you go for certificate pinning, root pinning, obfuscation, those are all great things. You don't necessarily need to bold those things. And the rest of the resume is also similarly good. I like that there are some numbers. This person talks about 20 something things. It seems they have done things there. So my feedback, like, this is a strong resume in general. And the challenge for this person will be the visa situation, because again, there is this unwritten thing that as long as you can find local people, you will not go to people with visas. So in a few years later, when this person is senior, it might be easier. And until then, it'll probably have to be a numbers game in terms of application. So that's my feedback. Let's hear from other people. Who wants to go next?
Yeah. I like the format of this one. I know somebody's put one of the questions in the group that, in the chat, sorry, that all the CVs so far have been quite Word documents and maybe a little less effort on the design. So I think this one just is a lot cleaner, nicer to look at. It does follow probably a more like modern design, you know, than the old-fashioned grid and skills matrix table that we had in the last one. So yeah, I think that does that does play the strengths. It does depend on the role, because I definitely think if you're applying for something more like front end UX UI, it should have more, you know, design thought, which, you know, generally speaking, it's more about the content, I would say. But it can just be these small little things, small little tweaks that can, yeah, give you, shortlist you over somebody else. But yeah, I agree. I like it. I like the skills. I do like the bold. No, you don't.
Maybe this is overkill. This is where it shows that there is no one opinion. Like, I love the fact that we're disagreeing.
Yeah, so I do like the bold, just so it's easier to look at. But no, nice clean CV, enough detail. And yeah, just I think that's a good one.
Any other comments before we jump into Q&A?
Yeah, I would probably say just on what Cheryl was saying there, it is a nice CV to look at. It's, you know, it's clean and it's modern looking, as she said. I would just make sure that you're not putting a CV together that's style over substance. As you've seen from what we've been speaking about, you know, we want to see the context, the achievements, the impact. And I've seen CVs that have been really, really sort of graphic designed, and sometimes it's distracting and it distracts from the actual good work that you've done, or it masks, you know, your inabilities in certain areas as well. So, you know, something like this is great, but I would just make sure it's not sort of style over substance. But yeah, I think this is a good CV as well. I probably want to find out how he was pushing to develop to the next stage, and just, you know, have a bit more clarity around that. If he was applying for a senior position, why does he think that he's right and ready for that position now as well?
Awesome. Graham, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, just going to say, from a hiring manager point of view, it's very clean, easy to read. It's quite concise as well. You know, so you don't have to really read through the words to really find out exactly what the achievements are. And there's some good use of words as well. You know, I know I've picked up on these previously, like improved, contributed, developed, acquired. So there's no sort of needing, you know, to interpret what the, you know, what this person's saying. You know, you can easily pick it out. And obviously, when you're looking through CVs, when you get them from the likes of Ruth and Cheryl, you know, and it does make it a better experience, so you can, you know, decide if the person's worth a call or not, and then take it forward.
All right. Well, let's. I suggest we hit the Q&A session now, and I'm going to ask. So, all of you are.
Oh,
we
can't hear you now,
Gergen.
That might be my fault. I've just stopped screen sharing.
Well, I think obviously he was going to say we'll throw it out to some of the questions that have been in the chat. So I've seen one from Bernard. He was saying that he has a gap in his CV because unfortunately he was let go from his position due to COVID. He's asked whether or not he should be telling us about that gap. Yes, absolutely. I would definitely put the reason why you haven't been working on your CV, just from a perspective of if I don't have that information, then I would just think maybe you'd potentially been let go for a negative reason. Whereas obviously this was completely out of your hands. So just saying, you know, yes, I've got that in my CV. This is the reason why. And then things that you've been doing to help keep up to date with things while you've been out of work, that might be good to put on as well.
Yeah, I think you've asked a couple of questions as well. So I would definitely include what you've been doing. Personal projects, I think if you've been out of work, but you've been sharing your work, you know, on GitHub, you've been upskilling, I think that's great. And some people continue to do that while they're at work as well. So I think that's really important. Important to do. I'm just having a little look because I think you'd asked a couple of questions. So yeah, definitely about the gap in your CV. So somebody else has asked, Matthew, Dev, if you don't have a degree in software engineering, let's just jump to the beginning, but you do have, I think it said you had 3 years experience, do you have any specific tips? So we've had this discussion previously when we were discussing another CV, and like for me, I think experience is more important. But if a client specifically requests it, like sometimes public sector companies in the UK, you have to have certain points to or certain criteria in order to justify certain salaries. So sometimes it's you need it to get through the door. But I'd be interested to hear from a hiring manager perspective, Graham, is a personal preference, or do you guys usually say that, you know, would you consider someone experience over qualification? I think you might have gone off. I don't know if it's just me left here, but...
Yeah, I'm still here, I think. You can't see me, though. I think when for our company, it's helpful if you do have the degree because you've got sort of the background, but I think you'll find... of the sort of things that you've learned within your first couple of years might actually be out of date by the time you've sort of go into the workplace itself. But, you know, it's always good to have that background as well. That being said, we look at experience more than sort of anything with regards to that. Certain roles will require a qualification, but not all roles. So, you know, having that experience is as relevant, just making sure that you've been clear about, you know, the level that you've been working at and any outside learning that you've done, you know, professional learning that you've kept up with would be beneficial if you haven't got a degree to state on your CV. I hope that answers that.
All right, awesome. I dropped off, but now I'm back.
Oh, hi, Gage. Good to have you back.
Yeah.
Carry on.
Yeah, something happened to the stream, but I just refreshed. All right. I'm not sure where we are. Who's going next? Graham?
Yeah, I can go next, yeah. So I was just going to say, Simon's asked a few questions. I think the first one is around how does he fit the CV with the context, achievements, and impact, as well as working for different companies. So I guess how do you keep it short and, you know, and neat, I would say. You know, if you write it out and if you draft it and if you just keep going over and over until you make the words more concise and more punchy, you know, so you might start off with a 4-page CV, but your goal is to end up with 2 pages. You know, so just look at how you can condense what you're trying to say. Make sure you don't duplicate things. You know, you might mention the same words, I don't know, over 2 pages. You know, so just see how you, if you've used it once to be effective, you don't need to use it again, like that particular statement or that achievement. You know, so I'd just say draft it and go back over and fine tune it, and then you'll get there. There was another one you asked about more than one page. Yeah, I'd say 2 pages if you can aim for that. Obviously, 1 page is great, but you know, you might be really experienced, you might have a lot to tell, and I'd certainly not be put off by more than 1 page, but keep it to 2 if you can. And then there's another one around using sort of the number of monthly active users or different private stats of the company. I would say if it's not public information, then stay away. I don't know if anybody else has any other opinion, but I would say, you know, if it's not public information, then don't share it.
Yeah. So on that one, I just have a point on this information now, and I'm really large. You, for engineering information that is not business information, number of services, number of requests, those should be fine to put on there, and you should be able to generalize it. For company information that has to do with revenue, potentially users, just be careful. Generalizing might be fine. So you might be fine saying hundreds of millions of users, because don't forget that you're like, you do want to showcase that you have worked at scale. Look for not business critical numbers to share. So again, don't share revenue numbers, because that could get you in trouble.
Yeah, I noticed one question Aidan had said. I did get your CV, Aidan, this morning. We got quite a few through, so I will, anybody whose CV, who sent them and who we didn't share out of those 4, because we just had to select a sort of selection, we'll all get back to, we'll share them out and all come back to you with some specific feedback. So apologies we couldn't go through everybody's, but I can confirm I did get that. So thank you for sending it, and I will come back. And I think you've asked another question as well about your volunteering. So you do lots, how much should you talk about it? You've only got 1 year experience. So I definitely think you should talk about it, and I definitely think you should mention it, but depending on the role, it depends what the volunteering is. If you were volunteering, you know, I gave an example before, somebody volunteered at a code club, or if you volunteered creating websites for friends, companies, and you could share those, then I would say definitely share those, showcase them. If you've got a portfolio of what you've worked on, great. If you're volunteering, I don't know, I volunteer for Age UK to be a friend for this old lady, for example. I might include, you know, volunteered on that, but I probably wouldn't talk about, you've asked how much should you talk about it. So I would just mention volunteering and maybe one line about it at the end, or, you know, about hobbies and interests or something. I would only talk about it for, if it's relevant. Don't feel like you have to just fill out 2 pages to for the sake of filling it up. I would try and keep it, show a little bit of personality, but keep it as relevant to the job that you're applying for, because you want to show that's where your passions are, rather than something else. So hopefully that answers that.
Yeah, and I guess I'll just go with, I'll just take a few questions as well, just one or two that's here. One of them is, Chad was asking about, are there resume formats that are easier for ATSs to parse information from? And sometimes this ATS resume, they come up, especially for people who are selling things, career coaches, whatnot. There is no such thing as ATS filtering your resume. So people look at your resume. ATSs do parse resumes for the sake of keeping it in a system and make it easy to search, which probably will not affect you. What that means is in the ATS, you could search for, like, I'm looking for a Java person or something like that. Usually just search for the name of the person to see if they're in the application line. You rarely ever search for anyone specifically, so it doesn't really matter how they're parsing it, and most of them parse it terribly, and people know that. So like the anytime you see something with resumes and ATS, just be mindful. Often people are trying to scare job seekers saying that robots are rejecting resumes. It's not. It's me. It's the hiring manager who's rejecting resumes. And as the recruiter, and after we've read it through, and it might be for a variety of reasons, there will be an automated rejection once we press the button to put it in the form, into the status of rejected. Well, you'll get that polite email, but it's a person who's looking at it. And Amy Miller on YouTube is doing, she's a recruiter at Google, Amazon, and I think another Microsoft as well. She keeps talking about, like, we haven't found a single recruiter who found these things. And any last questions? I suggest we just do a few more minutes because we'll have to wrap up. So anyone?
Yeah, I've got something to sort of add to that. Obviously, you're going through a process, and you know your CV is the starting point. Having a great CV is really going to get you to the next level, and then from there, it's all on you, really, from the telephone interviews, video interviews, and skills tests that you might have to complete. And I would say that, you know, with our company, over the last year, we've had some really, really good people coming through for our tech roles. And we've unfortunately had, you know, some people have not been successful, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they weren't a good candidate. It just means that there was someone who was slightly more experienced or had something that was slightly more relevant in their background to the role. We've had a lot of people who've been great and who unfortunately haven't got the position. So I would just say, you know, have that confidence in yourself. Make sure it's clear on your CV. Make sure that you're giving yourself the best chance possible of getting an interview. And then even if you're not successful through interview, it doesn't really reflect badly on you. Ask for feedback. They'll give you feedback, you know, where they can. And a lot of the time you'll find that the feedback is that there was just something small that, you know, prevented you from, you know, getting that job offer. So you can use that feedback and move forward with your next interview. Having the CVs, the best starting point, but, you know, sometimes you're just not going to get the role and it might be out of your hands. So I would just say, you know, not be too disheartened when you know, things don't go as you'd hope.
And I think that's a good wrap up, Ruth. So if we did not answer questions here, we didn't get to some of them. Maybe, Cheryl, we can try to post, collect some of them and post it. I'll see if I can save this one, post it on the Meetup group. If we don't do, if we cannot save it, I'm not sure if we can, please send it on the Meetup group and we'll try to just get an answer with back. And we'll work with Cheryl on getting some feedback on the remaining resumes that we were not able to do. We'll see if we can do a quick huddle, but it's not going to be a live session. I want to thank everyone for attending, and just as a reminder, like the reason we really wanted to get a varying perspective together, we do know job hunting is hard. I still remember when I first moved to the UK, I didn't hear back for weeks from recruiters when I thought I had a really good resume. The answers are, you don't really know why sometimes you're not successful, but there are people behind the process. We are some of those people. We all have different viewpoints. We're all trying to do our job well. And it is a tough system to get through. It does get easier over time. Once you get that first role, once you get that second role, once you get that senior role, and at some point people start to get upset with the recruiters and they start thinking, why am I getting those things? But we were able to bring a little bit of transparency of how the system works. Hopefully you'll get some advice. And again, if you don't have your role just yet, please take the book. You'll be able to get it for free. And we hope you've had, this was useful. And thanks everyone for showing up, both for the attendance and of course, Graham, Cheryl, Ruth. It was amazing to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks for facilitating as well.
All right. We're stopping this stream. Bye.
Bye.